Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puig de Montanieri. I think it's safe to say we are both pretty fried after what was another pretty mad MotoGP weekend.
Yeah, I think we are happy. We're as happy as destroyed. So yeah. Equally. So yeah, but yesterday the race was really, really, really good. So yeah, hope we're going to get more of those.
There's no suggestion that it's not going to happen because we're six races in now and it's just nuts. There's no form guide. We've got four new winners, satellite riders winners. It's brilliant. And we have a brand new winner in Franco Morbidelli. Probably it's going to be the most popular result of the season. Certainly one of them, because Franco is such a nice guy, such a well-liked guy in the paddock, but it was such a brilliant ride. You know, he dominated that race. He fended off Rossi. It was perfect, I think is the only word to describe it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all the paddock was very happy yesterday. That's the best way to describe it, because he's a very nice guy, very clever, very intelligent, and very different. I'm not saying that all the others are, less intelligent, but he's, I mean, yeah, he's like normal guy, which is pretty rare at this stage.
The comparison I made, I wrote a feature which will, by the time you've heard this, will have gone up on Autosport. I had sort of compared the MotoGP paddock, if it's like thrash metal, then Franco is like reggae, laid back, you know, super chilled. Not really a motorcycle racer's...
Well, he's not a MotoGP star. He is, but he doesn't...
doesn't behave like it.
Exactly, which is the best way to describe a MotoGP rider.
It's a great story, Franco's, because it's not been an easy road for him to get to this point. You know, he started in racing, didn't have money, went to Superstock 600, which is not really a place for MotoGP riders to come. I was actually looking at the result sheets from the 2013 season, which Franco won, and the names are just, so many of them have just disappeared off the face of the planet. And there's Franco, who's worked his way up, you know, a tragedy in his life as well, but he took every opportunity that Rossi gave him through the academy, through Moto2, and yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, he summarized really good yesterday in the Parc Fermé when he said a few years ago I was here racing on the Italian Championship, and now I'm here winning a MotoGP race. So yeah, but at the same time he was completely relaxed. He was a bit overwhelmed, of course, but it was fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you think as well, last year wasn't an easy year for him. You know, it wasn't a bad year, but then Fabio comes along and just blows the doors wide open. And I spoke to Franco before the weekend and he admitted, he said, look, I got my butt kicked by Fabio and I never had that before. So over the winter, it forced him to rethink. It forced him to get mentally tougher. He got a bit physically tougher as well. And the results have been there this year. He was strong in the Spanish Grand Prix. He was heading for a podium in Andalusia before the engine problem. Bruno, he was on the podium after leading. Austria was difficult, but the pace has been there. And more often than not, he's been a rival for Fabio this year. And of course, Misano is where it all came together.
Yeah, I spoke with Ramon Forcada about Franco, and he told me, listen, the diagnosis we did last year was he didn't show the real potential for different reasons. Then he, how do you say that, broke his butt during winter, working physically, mentally as well. Now he's much stronger. You look at him and you see that his body has changed. He's much stronger with more muscles, and even mentally he has changed because he has used Fabio's example as a boost for him to demonstrate, to show that his potential, and then which is the, like, let's say, the fairy tale story.
Yeah, for sure, it was a fairy tale, and it was a contrasting sort of fortunes from Franco and Fabio, because Fabio, of course, you know, looked like he was going to be the guy to beat in the race along with Maverick, but didn't get a great start. Then he got stuck behind Maverick, and he said he got too excited. Front tire pressure went up, and then when he got clear, he crashed. And, you know, these mistakes, you know, he's only in his second year, so mistakes will happen, but you can't help but feel a big opportunity went away from him yesterday, because he's lost the championship lead now to Dovizioso, and Dovi was nowhere.
I mean, he just needs to recover the calm, because it's only, let me think, 6 points, 3 points?
Six points
behind Dovi, so it's nothing, considering that Dovi yesterday was seventh. So it's almost nothing. So yeah, I would say that it's just he needs to find the calm again, and because he's been fast during the weekend, and it's just a mistake. For example, I would be much more worried if I'm Maverick, or thinking on Maverick than thinking on Fabio, because it is a mistake. I mean, when you do a mistake, you know, and you know why, it's much easier. But the problem, for example, with Maverick is that he doesn't have any explanation. So he doesn't know why he's completely lost on Sundays. So in the case of Fabio, yeah, he made a mistake. Maybe he was too... Yeah, he told us that he was overexcited probably at some point. He wanted to reduce the gap, and he crashed. He did a mistake, he went wide, and he crashed. But yeah, I mean, as you say, it's only his second year in MotoGP. And despite what he says, I mean, what's the pressure? This is the pressure. And when you try to, okay, he was worried about the possibility of Franco going away. So he was pushing. Okay, this is a kind of pressure. I'm not talking about the pressure of winning the championship, the pressure of winning the championship or the title. No. But this is the pressure. So yeah, he made a mistake, but I think he will be back there in front next weekend.
It's an interesting point that you raise about Vinales, because, you know, all weekend he looked strong, pole position with a lap record. And then he said to me in the debrief, he went from being a lap record setter to being a cone for the other riders on track. And it's the same problems, and they don't know what the problems are. He said he was the only one who went for the hard rear tire, but he said that wasn't a factor. And I sort of believe that, because he was strong all weekend on the hard tire. But it's happened again, Yuri, and this has happened for years now. It's not a case of it's a few races. This is 2-3 seasons now. This has continued to happen.
I mean, I was there as well at the debrief, and when somebody asked him, listen, is maybe something in your head? And he said, in my head? I mean, Saturday afternoon, I broke the lap record. I got pole position. I was very happy. And Sunday race, I have forgotten how to ride a bike. This is not possible. Well, this is not possible, but they are all human people, and they all have this kind of pressure. And yeah, I mean, which is clear is that something is happening to him. And if he doesn't know what's going on with the bike, he doesn't have any explanation from Yamaha, so what's the point? Maybe it's crazy, because Rossi is much slower Friday and Saturday, and Sunday, boom. And even Rossi told us that there are riders like Maverick being really, really fast on practice sessions on qualifying and on testing. And there are other kind of riders like him that he struggles much on practice sessions, but on Sundays he rises.
What more can he do? He's turned the bike around upside down numerous times. Yamaha don't have an answer. He doesn't have an answer, but yet it's only him that struggles with it. And that's the strange thing, is it's only him.
Well, I mean, only the time will tell what was the problem, considering and after the decisions Yamaha will make in the future, because at some point you need to do a change. Okay, now he has signed 2 more years with Yamaha, but let's see what happens first this year and then next year. Because I mean, at some point somebody has to take a decision. If I mean, yesterday he told us, listen, this is what happened in the last 30 races with Yamaha. Okay, so at some point you need to change something. He decided to swap or to say goodbye to Ramon Forcada, and he took Esteban Garcia. And did we notice any change? Not really, or even yes, but in the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, you look as well, the change of crew chief. You know, Forcada went to work with Morbidelli, and look where. So it's it's a strange.
The thing is, I'm not saying that Forcada is better crew chief than Esteban. I'm just saying that the impact of any crew chief is much less important than the brain or the head of the rider. That's what I mean.
Yeah, sure. Maybe early to say, but do you think now Vinales is maybe regretting not pursuing the Ducati option a little bit harder?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because I think that is, I mean, if he believes that that the problem is the bike, I mean, look at Dovizioso.
Yeah, true.
So I wouldn't say so. I think that it's more he needs to work on himself. He needs to work on together with the team, together with his entourage, trying to reinforce his mental strength, and then just trying to avoid falling into these holes.
For sure. The rest of the podium was an interesting podium. We had Bagnaia second, despite, you know, still he's still hobbling about on a crutch. His leg's still recovering.
Amazing.
And it's his first race since July as well. I think that's a point that's been overlooked a little bit, is that he's not actually been on the bike for a long time. And he was incredible the whole weekend, fast. And you have to say very timely as well, because, of course, Ducati is nearing their decision between Bagnaia and Zarco.
I think the decision is already done. And I think the decision was already done before this race, but they like to play this game. They like
play the game, yeah. But certainly if we hypothetically say that they're still deciding, then Bagnaia surely, that's it, he's secured it. Why would you put Zarco on the bike over Bagnaia? I mean, if we look at Zarco, Zarco was 15th, Bagnaia was second on a broken leg.
So. There's no point. I mean, he deserved that bike, but not for this race. I mean, we've been saying that for many weeks. I mean, there's no point on not giving him this bike. I mean, and don't forget that I think he will put Miller in trouble next year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I agree with
Don't forget that this is Pecco Bagnaia. I mean, the one that really smashed in Moto2. I mean, this is the real, this is the one we were expecting last year. Well, maybe not fighting for the podium from the first race, but this is his standard. So,
for sure. And finally, Joan Mir, you know, another, that overtake on Rossi was superb. You know, that was a sensational bit of racing from Joan. And, you know, doing exactly what he needed to do on the Suzuki. Suzuki's not really gone so well at Misano, so to get a result like that for his championship, it's exactly what he needs, and it's a good building block for next week.
Yeah, I think he's growing very fast. I mean, he's building up his confidence. He's opposite than last year. I mean, yesterday everything was very tough for him. He was not able to make the Suzuki work. Now everybody looks easy on him. He is capable and he's growing up much, much faster. And he's building up his confidence, and I think that he will deserve a win, 100%.
Yeah. It's coming, you know. It's not a matter of if, it's when it's going
to
happen.
I mean, it should have happened in Austria, because he was 2.5 seconds ahead when Vinales crashed, and I think that it's going to happen sooner than later.
For sure. You have to think as well that perhaps, and I think for the first time this season, you know, a win might not be totally impossible for Valentino Rossi. You know, good weekend, all weekend he was good in Misano. You know, in that podium fight right to the end, didn't quite have the pace of that top three, but you know, it's the strongest he's looked for a long, long time. Yes, Misano home circuit, he rides a lot there, but still, you know, it's looking better than it has done for a while.
Yeah, but 100%. And yesterday I was really thinking, whoa, maybe this is it. This is today. Today is the day.
I thought the same as well.
But I mean, after that, trying to analyze to the situation, at the same time I thought, listen, Valentino has been struggling very, very much with the rear consumption. I mean, with the rear tire consumption. So considering that the tires now are playing a huge impact and a huge role on the races, maybe he still needs a bit more time to try to find the right balance, because the drop of the tire has a huge impact, and it's, yesterday at some point I thought, listen, Maverick is trying to is holding him back, just waiting for the moment to attack when the others will have no more rear tire. But yeah, I think he wait a bit more a bit too much.
yeah a little bit too much. One guy that was never really at the races yesterday was Dovizioso, but he leads the championship now. Which just goes to show you how, I mean, I think it's at this stage last year, 79 points covered was the championship lead for Marquez. And Dovizioso has sat on, I think, 77 points or something like that, which just goes to show you how mad this championship has been. But, you know, same old issues for Dovi. Tire doesn't really work, and it's not as if it's a consistent problem. It doesn't work at every circuit, and it seems to be a different problem at every circuit with the tire, whether it's braking or acceleration. I really don't have an answer for what's going wrong with Dovizioso, because he doesn't really know how to fix the problem either, and it's bizarre, because you look at the other Ducatis, strange.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's very difficult to have an explanation about that, because he is probably the most consistent rider of the grid, and I'm not saying that he is consistent on the top, but he's consistent. I mean, he's normally always in that position. And now he has more ups and downs than ever before. So, yeah, at some point, I think at the same time, I think that Dovi and Ducati will find the key.
Yeah, you have to think that'll happen, because it happened before. It happened in 2017.
And at the same time, I think that if they do that, this is his year.
Yeah, he's dead. This is what a couple of riders noted over the weekend, is that the threat from Dovizioso, though he's not quick right now, is that he's consistent. And when he will get quick, he'll be consistently quick. And, you know, we're coming up to some good Ducati tracks. Aragon's pretty good. Le Mans is not bad for the Ducati. Barcelona as well,
yeah.
So there's an opportunity coming up for Dovizioso if Ducati can get that thing. But it sort of sounds like the relationship within Ducati between Dovi and the team, it's not really all that harmonious right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but I think that they have this opportunity, I don't think they're not going to waste it with this kind of things.
I don't think it'll be that. But there was comments made by Casey Stoner, and Dovi was asked about them. You know, Stoner said Ducati puts too much emphasis on data, not the rider. Yeah, Dovi was asked about it, and he didn't want to answer it, but you can see in his face he really did want to answer it. And this is, I think, the problem that could trip up Ducati, is that if they aren't listening to the riders so much, then
yeah, but there
is an opportunity that could walk away. Well, it's true, yeah.
I mean, this even happened in 2017. I mean, Dovi always has had this impression that Ducati didn't give him so much relevancy, and that I think that is the main reason why he's leaving the team.
Yeah, for sure. You could kind of see, if you've seen the Red Bull documentary, the Undaunted documentary, you can kind of, comments from Gigi Delinea in particular, sort of, you know, it's obvious that Dovi's put a lot into Ducati and he deserves a lot more love than he seems to have been shown, particularly by Gigi. You know, Paolo Ciabatti and, you know, Davide Tardozzi are definitely the more sensible sort of heads within Ducati, and they care a bit more about the riders. But it's the head honchos and Domenicali and Delinea that seem to be sort of the problem.
Well, I wouldn't.
That's my pick from the outside, but yeah, you know, I mean,
it's not just it's an ego thing always. Always. I mean, they both have a huge ego because they both are really, really, really good on their side or on their, you know, jobs. But it's difficult when they have to work together and when they have to, you know, say, okay, it's not easy. And that's why they need to find a common way to go and to keep going and to try to solve these problems, because otherwise they're going to lose a huge opportunity to win this title.
For sure. 100% agree with that. Just finally, I wanted to talk about radios. I think we talked about this a little bit in the pre-season. What are your thoughts on it? Because there's obviously this radio thing, it's a safety thing, but it's talks of it being like Formula One, and some riders think, ah, that's going to make MotoGP 2 machine-like, but others like Rossi are going, I think it might be all right.
I think it would be amazing, to be honest. I think it would be amazing. Considering then there's a sprint race, then there is no pit stops, then there is no, you know, I think that would be a plus for the, that would be a plus for the spectators, for the show.
This is Cal Crutchlow said this. I asked him about it on whatever, and he said, well, could you imagine if me and Jack had radios, you know? Do you know it's that sort of thing. You look at what happened in Formula One right now with guys like Lando Norris, who've, you know, the radios used really effectively, and it allows the fans a little bit of, you know, a bit more access to the drivers, and that would be good for the riders. I personally don't see it ever getting that way in MotoGP, because I think it would be a bit too distracting, because I can't imagine how someone talking in your ear when you're going from left to right to this. do you know what I mean? I don't think it'll get to that point, but a lot of people are going, oh, it's going to ruin the racing, it's going to make it boring, but it's not really an argument, is it? It's racing isn't dictated by radios.
Yeah, I think that would be really, really good for the show, and it didn't. Yeah, as Rossi said, I don't think the MotoGP DNA would be less interesting with the radios? Would be affected at all for the race, for the radios? I mean, what can they tell you? I mean, you have the board, you have, come on, faster. That would, I mean.
Yeah. There is no live telemetry in MotoGP right now. So there's no, nothing's really going to change unless they have live telemetry, but you could easily just write into the rules, you're not allowed that, and that would be the end of it. So it's not, a lot of people are making a bigger problem out of this, I think, than what there is there.
We always have this kind of people, which is, I mean, okay, I respect them all, but they say, no, we have to keep the spirit of, okay, I mean, we are not touching the spirit at all. We are just making it more fun.
More fun. That's what we want. And I think that's a very good note to end on. Yuri, thank you very much. And thank you to the listeners for joining us. I know it's been a couple of weeks, but, you know, there's 8 more races to come in 10 weeks, so there'll be plenty of podcasts. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to all of our other ones on Spotify and Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and wherever else you get podcasts these days. And check out Autosport and motorsport.com for all of the San Marino Grand Prix reaction and action. We've been busy as anything. So a lot for you to check out there. But until next week, it's a very warm goodbye.